It's time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timberjay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, good to talk to you.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's start off with a follow-up on the St. Louis County schools. And they were having problems with some buildings and got some authority to seek some legal action with the contractors. What's been happening?
Yeah, well, and we had talked about this a few weeks ago, I think, in regards to the St. Louis County school system, and two schools in particular, South Ridge and Northwood schools. Both had been built back in like 2010, 2011, in that time period, and they've already experienced a number of issues with these schools, from uneven settling of floors, sidewalks, cracking of walls, cracking of sidewalks, and they've had issues with parking lots and some other major kind of structural stuff as well that has been going on, particularly at South Ridge. And I haven't been there to see that. I have toured the Northwood School and seen some of the issues there. But basically, a few weeks ago, the superintendent, Reggie Engelbretson, had told the school board she was going to be seeking authority to retain a law firm in order to try to pressure the companies that were involved in construction of these schools, try to pressure them to play a role in some of the work that's going to be needed to be done here to repair these schools. Because some of these, you know, I would say most of the issues are probably relatively minor, but, you know, when you start adding them all up and figuring out what it's going to cost to repair, you're going to be into the millions of dollars. There's no doubt about it. Obviously, the school district is justifiably concerned about that expense, and they're trying to find out if there's ways that, you know, under the contracts that were in place, whether they're going to be able to get some help here. And two of the companies, both Krauss Anderson and Architectural Resources, have been in contact with the district and said, you know, they're willing to talk about possible solutions here. And that came after this started to get a little bit more attention, I think, in the news. And the one company they haven't heard from, however, is Johnson Controls, which was kind of the main contractor on this whole project. And they actually had subcontracted with Krauss Anderson and ARI. So it's not 100% clear, you know, what rights the school district has to seek compensation from those companies, because they didn't have a direct contract with them. And so that may play into this and whether or not they have any kind of legal claims. Apparently, they've done some initial looking at the contracts, and they say they're not very clear. It remains to be seen whether there's going to be options, but at least at this point, it appears that a couple of the companies are willing to take some ownership of the situation and possibly help out. But it remains to be seen whether Johnson Controls is going to do anything. And that company, you know, Johnson Controls had been doing a lot of work with schools like this, doing strategic planning and then doing major facilities projects and kind of overseeing all that. And they got themselves in some trouble with St. Louis County Schools. And we did quite a bit of reporting on that as well at the time. And I think the publicity that got around the state, Johnson Controls basically has left Minnesota. And I don't know if they're doing that same kind of work in other states, but for right now, they've pretty much quit that business. So it's hard to say whether or not they're going to want to come back in and have to cough up anything to address some of their past work. It remains to be seen.
Let's move into another story you've been covering at the Timberjay, having to do with some problems that congressional committees are having getting information that they want. What are they looking for, and what are you seeing a pattern here, or what's going on?
Yes. Well, we have a number of congressional committees, actually. One in particular that's a subcommittee headed by 4th District Minnesota Congresswoman Betty McCollum, and she has been pushing the Trump administration on a couple of different fronts here for a while. In particular, she's seeking comments that were prepared by professional staff at the Environmental Protection Agency, and these were comments that they had drafted in response to a permit proposal that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had developed for the PolyMet project, and that was a water discharge permit. And apparently the EPA staff did have some concerns about certain aspects of that permit. Apparently their written comments, anyway, were kept from being delivered. Somehow, one of the political appointees apparently had interceded and prevented the staff from delivering written comments to the MPCA. And instead, apparently they've acknowledged this, that they read those comments over the phone to the MPCA staff. But by doing that, there's no record of the comments. And that's an issue because now this whole matter is in litigation, and so those comments could be very relevant. So environmental groups, as well as now Betty McCollum, are trying to get those comments. The interesting thing is that McCollum has been unable to get those to this point, even though the EPA has acknowledged now that they do have those comments, but they're just not handing them over at this point. And then the other issue is McCollum's committee, as well as two other committee chairs in the House, are trying to get more information, documents, and scientific studies and other related documents related to the decision by the Trump administration to reinstate two mineral leases for the Twin Metals project. That's the copper nickel mining project near Ely. And the Obama administration had canceled those two mineral leases back in 2016, but now the Trump administration decided to reinstate those. And that decision is in court. And at this point, McCollum and others are trying to get information about the decision-making behind that process. And also they're seeking information and documents related to the decision to cancel a two-year study of a moratorium or a withdrawal of mineral leasing on portions of the Superior National Forest. And that would have basically prevented any additional mineral leasing in the same area where Twin Metals is looking at developing a copper nickel mine. And that had been a proposal by the Obama administration and was in process, but then the Trump administration canceled that study. And it was close to completion, but they canceled it anyway. And so now the Congress is asking questions about, well, why was it canceled and what kind of information had been developed up until that decision. So at this point, though, they're not really getting much information at all from the administration. And it seems to be part of a pattern where congressional committees are having a great deal of difficulty getting documents that normally are pretty routine requests, because Congress obviously does have an oversight role over the executive branch and all the agencies and departments. And so requesting documents is just a routine part of that oversight.
Okay.
But it's hard to do when you don't get the information that you're asking for.
Right. And can anything be done? They just don't get the documents to them? Or?
Well, at this point, they could probably issue a subpoena, which would be highly unusual, to have to do that for these types of documents. And, they could demand that some of the officials who are responsible come and talk to their committees. But it all takes time. Eventually some of this information will come out, but, the longer the delay goes on, it just makes it harder to do the oversight that Congress is charged with doing.
That's right. Well, let's go outside for your next couple of stories. Let's talk ice outs and the hatchery at Pike River. What's going on?
Yeah, well, the Pike River hatchery, of course, they are up and running. They've been running really since this past weekend, and it's been pretty good so far. It was a little bit slow for the walleye the first couple days. The water temperatures were just starting to get into the favorable range for the walleye run. And the walleyes for centuries have been coming into the Pike River this time of year for their annual spawning run. And for quite a few years, now several decades, the DNR has maintained a hatchery there. So they've got nets out that kind of gather up herd the walleye into big pens. And they use them then gather the males and the females, and they strip the eggs and then fertilize them, and then they raise them until they're hatched in the hatchery facility there. And so it's always kind of fun to watch because you get to see, whenever you go out there, you get to see lots of big walleye, especially the big females. They're pulling out of these pens. I mean, they're just huge and nothing like I ever catch. I know that. they're always fun to see. And there's usually lots of other activity out there. You've got, you've got cormorants are taking advantage of the run, and you've got some years you get big flocks of pelicans that come in there, and you often have eagles. So it's always kind of a fun place, lots of activity happening right there. And it's located right at the mouth of the Pike River where it comes into Lake Vermilion. It's a great spot to just spend a little time and watch all the activity. And they also do collect suckers there, too. The white suckers that come in, they have a spawning run as well. And they had a huge run of suckers this year. I think they had over 7,000 pounds that they were able to gather this year. And then they sell those, actually, the Lake Vermilion, or the Vermilion Lake Association, I should say. They have a sucker sale. So you can get 100 pounds of suckers there for $10, which is a pretty good deal, except then you have to figure out what you're going to do with 100 pounds of suckers.
Yeah. Is a sucker good eating?
It is, okay. Actually. And, you know, we've done it before. You cut them up and can them.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, once they're canned, they actually make a pretty good sandwich. It's not, it's a little bit different than tuna, but it kind of has a tuna-like attitude to it. So, you know, you mix a little mayo and some chopped onion in there, and it makes a good sandwich.
Got a sucker sandwich.
Yes, absolutely. They probably should come up with a better name, I think.
Probably. Well, yeah. That's not so bad. But, so what are you seeing with ice outs?
Well, Pike Bay is pretty much clear as of today. That means it'll probably be a few more days. I'm kind of thinking midweek for Lake Vermilion, you know, probably May 1st, which is very close to its average. But then a lot of the smaller lakes are clear now. The lake near our house called Lost Lake, that lake cleared on April 24th. So that's about typical for that lake. It usually goes out about a week before Vermilion. So everything really this year is kind of right on about the average, which is unusual because it seems like we've been having either very late ice outs or very early ice outs the last several years. So having one right about average is, I guess, we'll take it.
Yeah. Well, before we go, we got to hear about something that is not average, something new at your feeder at your house.
Yes, this was the largest bird I'd ever had in my bird feeder,
And
it was a wild turkey. It is something that I never thought I'd actually see in the yard here. And, you know, this is a species that definitely is its normal range is south of here, and, of course, like a lot of species with climate change, I think, and other factors, they've been moving north, and I know lots of folks in northeastern Minnesota have seen wild turkeys in recent years. They're certainly spreading into this area. But, in the past, it seems like they've mostly been, you know, in more agricultural areas, or at least areas where there's a little bit of agriculture somewhere nearby. Where we live, I mean, we're on the edge of big, big forest, and there's really no agriculture anywhere near us. I mean, we're right on the edge of the Lost Lake Swamp. I mean, our closest neighbor to the west is 8 miles away. We don't have any ag here. It's all forest. So to see a wild turkey strutting through the yard, that was a bit of a surprise yesterday morning.
Oh, gosh. And I saw a photo of it you posted.
I did. I took that photo with my phone. I was very frustrated because my camera that I do all my wildlife photography with, it has the long lens, that was sitting in the car, in the garage.
Of course.
And I was in the house, so I couldn't go running out and get it because that wild turkey would have been long gone. They're quite wary. And that's something that I've heard from people before. And this bird was very wary. I mean, he even just talking at a normal level, he could hear us in the house.
Oh, wow.
Which is unusual.
Yeah. That's Marshall Helmberger. You can see photos and read more at timberjay.com. Have a great weekend. We check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.